This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to the 45th. Rabia here. I'm here with my colleague and co-host, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
I hear you are completely isolating yourself from world and U.S. news.
And hopefully COVID.
Yeah, that's the most important aspect of it. Well, it's okay.
Well, I'm also excited for next week when hopefully we'll actually have a live recording together, potentially.
Right. I am going to be, we're going to have to figure that out. We'll be talking through masks, distance from each other, but we might be able to be in the same space at least. We'll figure it out. Yeah, I'll be traveling to join you to do some work on what we do for Undisclosed. So I'm looking forward to that. It's the first time I'll be on a plane since March, I guess.
Godspeed.
Yeah, thanks. All right, so let's get down to it. Top of the show, COVID, where we are right now. It's not looking great. We are at about 7.8 million positive cases, 216,169 counted deaths. Yesterday, we hit a daily case rate of over 51,000 positive cases in the country, which is the highest number that we've hit in over 2 months. Hospitalizations are up. Right now, the U.S. has 36,000 COVID patients who are currently hospitalized, and 36 states have seen an over 10% rise in just the past week. Now, it's not just us. I looked at the Johns Hopkins, their global chart. For the last 3 months, like, the global cases have been slowly but surely trending upwards. I don't know. So I guess the question is why? I don't know why. Well, I mean, I think there's a number of reasons why. I think number one, obviously, a lot of places reopened, right? We had the temporary lockdowns in some places. A lot of places reopened. Schools started. Interestingly enough, the CDC director, Redford, said, had a call with governors this week, and he says that cases are trending up because of small gatherings. So people are being more careful outside. There's more mitigating kind of, things happening outside where people are forced to wear masks and whatever. But people are starting to kind of, I guess, to tire of shit and get together at homes in small gatherings.
That's definitely part of it. But I think people being tired of shit has been going on definitely US-wide and globally as well for quite a long period. I think when we look back at this, we're going to realize that we didn't know shit about this virus. And there are patterns at play that we're just not fully aware of at this point.
Infection?
Potentially that. I mean, that's the horror show, if that's actually true. But just, we know that flus are often seasonal. And guess when the last season was? Right around this time, when the first one came around. So we just cannot assume that it's going to disappear, like Trump said in April and is still saying now, because we don't know. Maybe it will. Maybe we'll get lucky, but we cannot plan for that because everything we have suggests that that is the way to maximize deaths.
How could it disappear? I mean, like, it seems completely impossible.
Okay. It could disappear because the pandemic of 1918 did, but
how long did that take?
3 years and 2 million plus dead. So let's not go that route. So the idea of disappearing, sure, that's something that could happen, but it's not something we can count on. And also, it's not going to disappear anytime soon.
So, there was a graphic that was circulating on Twitter yesterday, I think it was. And if you want to look for it, the guy who tweeted it is, I think, a writer. His name is Anthony Clark, and his handle is at Anthony J. Clark. It's a fascinating dynamic graphic. So it just shows since starts in May or maybe it's April. I can't remember to date, the top 25, infection rates in the top 25 states with the infection rates around the country, and it moves. So with every, as the weeks go by, it just, the states keep changing, trading places. Like Maryland was apparently up there for a very long time. I didn't realize we were one of the highest infection rates.
I didn't know.
It's a really kind of startling graphic to look at, but we start off with majority blue states, and now where we are, it's mostly red states in the top 25. I think 22 or 23 of the top infected states are the red states, and I think we know why, because mostly because many of them just refuse to issue masking orders or, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
that's definitely part of it, I'm sure. But I also think it could reflect a rural versus urban divide and that the current infection patterns are have reached some kind of critical mass in rural areas. Whereas before, they could kind of get away with it because they could, whatever math this virus is using was infecting them until this point. So I'm not sure it's solely about the actual responses that are being implemented, which matter a ton. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm not sure it's something simple as like blue versus red here.
Yeah, I mean, but I do think the fact that blue states have been responding differently, you're going to see. I mean, there are blue states that are not like all metropolitan and packed and urban. I mean, there are blue states like that too. And many of these states are just like blue or red by like not huge margins, right? Anyhow, I only bring that up because we've heard Trump say over and over again that basically it's the blue states. Actually, I think he's more specific. He's a blue cities, but he also calls out states. And, you know, that they're kind of on their own. I mean, he's played that game this whole time. I remember back, when was it, a few months ago when they had that coronavirus task force that actually apparently did something. And he told Pence not to even call, like Michigan, not to call Governor Whitmer.
That was the Kushner strategy from early on. If it's only affecting blue states, why worry? That's not going to affect his reelection chances.
True. So, dude, speaking of reelection chances and affecting them, Trump is back on the campaign trail. I am shocked. Have you seen?
Are you shocked, really?
I mean, I'm shocked. I'll tell you why I'm shocked. I'm shocked for two reasons. Number one, I'm going to lose $500 to my husband. Because I bet that it was going to take this guy out. I still don't believe that I don't understand how somebody.
He was sick before it was admitted. That's what seems to be the clear trend of everything here. And why the White House won't explain when his last negative test was, why the White House is refusing contact tracing, which is insanely irresponsible and unethical. All of the evidence is really firmly pointing at the fact that he was sick much sooner than before the debate, certainly.
But not sick enough to be like hospitalized and taken out of the public light type of thing. Uh-huh.
But sick enough to spread it and sick enough to get to the point of hospitalization when he did, which would make no sense under other timelines. So yeah, this guy was in fact a super spreader.
Well, the thing is, like, when people are hospital, I mean, that's the thing. I think I just expected that period to be longer and also to take more time to because when you, if you hit the point where you need
don't have a hospital in their homes. I mean, the White House is not a hospital quite, but it has near capability of one. And he was a stubborn patient who refused doctor's orders, so he went to a slightly less optimal hospital from the one he was at.
Well, he's been dancing to YMCA at his rallies for the last couple of days.
Oh, I'm so glad I missed that. I cannot.
You know what? He hasn't learned a lot since that Epstein video of him dancing in the corner with a grandma. You know what I'm talking about, that really
video. I don't, and I'm going to keep it that way.
Yeah, I know you've seen it. All right, well, anyway, like he's had the same moves for 40 years, apparently. He's
a third one. I'm not going to judge him for that.
So now the Presidential Commission on Debates had decided the second debate would be virtual, especially given the fact that no one in the White House will confirm when Trump had his last positive test. Right. Last negative test. And they keep saying things like, what was that one letter that physician issued saying that he is negative for being contagious or something?
What seems to be happening is that, well, one, the president's doctors are firmly on the spin train with him and are not about providing truth.
He intimidates everybody, doesn't he?
Or they just willingly sell their souls for him. So what the latest like doctor updates were saying is that Trump tested negative on antigen testing, which was, I mean, I'm assuming that's true. But it's also not the type of testing that would typically be used here. That'd be like PCR testing, which is more sensitive. Mm-hmm. However, PCR testing can also pick up people who have been infected but are no longer infectious.
Okay.
So most likely he still had positive PCR tests. The doctors decided, hopefully rightfully, that they didn't think he was contagious despite that. So they hid this fact and hand-waved it away by pointing at a negative antigen test.
Okay. Well, he's not masking. And he's not requiring masking at his rallies either. They were going to make the debate virtual. Trump said, I absolutely refuse to do a virtual debate. And one of the things he said, I thought this was so telling, was that he's like, you know, Biden, he said, Biden's going to sit behind the screen and they're going to give him the answers. Like he thinks this is like the SATs or something. I mean, like it's because I guess he has no answers. He has no real policy answers. We saw that in the first debate.
I'm just wondering why he stopped talking about the debate drugs, which I'm still curious about and learning more about, you know, for the record.
Oh, the enhancing drugs?
The debate enhancing drugs, yes.
Yeah, what are those?
And did he bring enough to share with everyone?
Can I just have them for my regular life? Did we cover the vice president debate, or did that happen last week after we recorded? It happened after we recorded.
It was after we recorded, yes.
Yeah, do we want to talk about it briefly? No. Not worth it?
The world stopped caring about it half an hour after it was over.
Fair enough. I did think Kamala Harris did a great job. I thought she had her points down solid. You know, Pence at least was, like, you know, civil. He's always been like that. But, you know.
Pence was actually more aggressive and uncivil than I've seen him before. I was kind of surprised.
This is right. That is true. He was more so than we've ever seen. Because we don't see him in that format. We just see him speaking alone. Here, he did keep interrupting Kamala Harris, who kept, and the moderator as a woman. And she kept saying, I'm speaking, Mr. Vice President. I'm speaking. And that became the meme for the night. That and the fly that landed on his head for a solid 2 minutes. So who else? Chris Christie's out of the hospital, but he said that he would issue a statement later, officially, kind of about the experience, I guess. I don't know how that's going to go. But I've heard nothing about anybody else who was at that Rose Garden ceremony. So no clue how they're doing. What are the chances that Trump will suddenly just, like, collapse and his recovery was just fake?
Unlikely.
Oh, that's tragic. Okay.
It's not. It's really not.
Okay, fine. all right, so let's talk about who was at the center of that ceremony. Amy Barrett. The SCOTUS confirmation hearings began this week. We are on day 3. I believe it's the final day. Have you been following it at all?
Not as much as I hoped to, but anytime I've gotten a break or when I'm in the car, I've been listening. And I've got to say, I think I just fell for the PR spin around Amy Coney Barrett that we've been hearing for the past, like, 3 years. Like, it's been pretty clear since Trump got in, basically, that she was being prepared. She was the Supreme Court nominee elect for quite some time. Mm-hmm. They were saving her for a situation where they needed a woman when it came up. But she has been, you know, the one they're going to go with since 2017. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just bought into the fact that she's probably actually really capable and smart and talented, obviously right. Super conservative. You know, like take
Gorsuch. I mean, her like, chops Gorsuch, are good, right? Her like
she does have a good pedigree. Like Gorsuch, I don't agree with on just about anything, but I have no questions really about his competence as a jurist.
Like you respect his intellectual capabilities, right?
I do.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with how he uses them, but like I don't doubt them. Amy Coney Barrett has not impressed me in the slightest. Like I think a part of it's expectations and that the fact that I thought she'd be better is making it stand out more to me, but I just don't find her impressive at all.
You know what I think it is? I mean, I think for a lot of folks, they expect that judges will be legal scholars. Judges are rarely legal
scholars.
She actually
is. She actually is, though.
Is she, though?
Yeah, she was a professor.
Girl, have you met professor? I mean, I don't know.
I'm
anyway,
a legal scholar, but she's
but look, I think plenty of professors and plenty of judges are not nearly as impressive as you imagine just because of their profession. But somebody who is being nominated for this position, you think particularly is going to be. I think that's what's been shocking for me. Now, I had never heard of the Ginsburg rule, to be honest. I don't know that much about like the Supreme Court and all. It's different. But apparently this is something that Barrett keeps bringing up. She keeps invoking the Ginsburg rule, and she's using that to not provide any position on like hypotheticals or whether she agrees with past precedents. What do you think about this?
This is what they all like. This is not a new thing. Mm-hmm. Their attempts to like call it like the Ginsburg rule is, I mean, whatever, that's right wing spin. But mm-hmm. like, this is a thing that's going on with all justices for, you know, since I've been aware of Supreme Court as a thing. And it's not, it has sound like ethical bases mm-hmm. for it. Mm-hmm. But in practice, people usually just use it to dodge questions they don't want to answer and still go ahead and answer the ones that they do want to answer.
Right.
And it is. And that's not new. That's totally normal for any nominee.
That's what I've been wondering. I'm like, you know, is because I
but she's taking it pretty far. Like she's taking it farther than I've seen it taken before. It's I mean, she's making it a very, well, a civil hearing. It's an uninteresting hearing from the bits I've been able to listen to, because she just doesn't have an opinion on anything. And the way she comes off is that she actually isn't just like hiding positions, like she doesn't have one. Like, of course we know she's going to be abortion, almost certainly anti-ACA. But let's just say that like there seems to be a lack of intellectual curiosity there on display.
I mean, look, she I'm sure she has her, she has her religious and political beliefs, but she has refused to take, basically she just keeps saying that, you know, until a matter is litigated, until there's legal consultation, until blah, 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 I cannot, you know, I can't tell you like how I would decide a certain thing. And I guess that is fair in some respects, but I just, I mean, okay. So, but some things just seem kind of clear. Anyhow, I wanted
justice should like commit to a ruling before they rule on it. That's fine.
Right.
But like, okay, even aside from the rulings, let's hear, for instance, what Amy Coney Barrett's opinions are on, you know, like factual things.
How about climate change? I mentioned climate change. Have you read about that?
I've read about climate change.
And you have some opinions on climate change that you've thought about?
You know, I'm certainly not a scientist.
I'm not saying you are.
I mean, I've read things about climate change. I would not say that I have firm views on it.
All right. So I don't know. I don't think I believe her. I guess I'm still going with my previous belief that she is a basically competent and respectable and impressive jurist. But my God, like that's the level of denialism that she's willing to go to. So there's that. And then there's like the horror show responses she's given, which like her response on what should happen to a president who is refusing to agree to peaceful transfer of power.
Do you believe that every president should make a commitment unequivocally and resolutely to the peaceful transfer of power?
Well, Senator, that seems to me to be pulling me in a little bit into this question of whether the president has said that he would not peacefully leave office. And so to the extent that this is a political controversy right now, as a judge, I want to stay out of it, and I don't want to express a view on.
So, Judge, I appreciate what you've said about respecting our founding fathers, about the originalism. It's remarkable that we're at a place right now that this is becoming a question and a topic, but I'm asking you, in light of our founding fathers, in light of our traditions, in light that everyone who serves in that office has sworn an oath where they, quote, swear to preserve and protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, I'm just asking you, should a president commit themselves, like our founding fathers, I think, have a clear intention, like the grace that George Washington showed, to the peaceful transfer of power? Is that something that presidents should be able to do?
Well, one of the beauties of America from the beginning of the Republic is that we have had peaceful transfers of power, and that disappointed voters have accepted the new leaders that come into office. And that's not true in every country. And I think it is part of the genius of our Constitution and the good faith and goodwill of the American people that we haven't had the situations that have arisen in so many other countries where there have been, where those issues have been present.
Her unwillingness to even oppose something so blatantly, like it should, in any other world or any other version of U.S. history, that'd be a softball question. But she can't oppose it because she knows, and the Republicans know, that Trump wouldn't like it. So I guess what they tell themselves is that she's not really, you know, neutral on the question of whether we should have a violent overthrow of democracy, but that she feels obligated to pretend she has no position on it in order to keep Trump happy.
Mm-hmm. And other answers she's given also to keep Trump happy. I wonder, I mean, if you think he's really following, I can't even imagine him sitting through something like this because it's not exciting.
He sees the Fox News clips.
He sees the clips, right. Okay, let's listen to the audio about whether the Constitution, she was asked whether she believes the Constitution allows Trump to delay the election.
Does the Constitution give the President of the United States the authority to unilaterally delay a general election under any circumstances? Does federal law?
Well, Senator, if that question ever came before me, I would need to hear arguments from the litigants and read briefs and consult with my law clerks and talk to my colleagues and go through the opinion writing process. So, you know, if I give off-the-cuff answers, then I would be basically a legal pundit, and I don't think we want judges to be legal pundits. I think we want judges to approach cases thoughtfully and with an open mind.
Okay, let me try something else.
And on whether Trump could pardon himself.
President Trump claims he has a absolute right to pardon himself. Now, for 200 years, the Supreme Court has recognized a common law principle that nobody can be a judge in their own case. That's, I had to go way back and reread Calder versus Bull to see that. But would you agree, first, that nobody is above the law? Not the president, not you, not me. Is that correct?
I agree. No one is above the law.
And does a president have an absolute right to pardon himself for a crime? I mean, we heard this question after President Nixon's impeachment.
Senator Leahy, so far as I know, that question has never been litigated. That question has never arisen. That question may or may not arise, but it's one that calls for a legal analysis of what the scope of the pardon power is. So because it would be opining on an open question when I haven't gone through the judicial process to decide it, it's not one on which I can offer a view.
Okay, so but it, you were willing to say that no person, not you, not me, not a president, is above the law. I find your answers somewhat incompatible, but those are your answers. You have a right to say what you want.
Of course, a lot of folks are really concerned about our position on the ACA and Roe. So let's hear what she had to say about Roe v. Wade.
So on something that is really a major cause with major effect on over half of the population of this country, who are women, after all, it's distressing not to get a straight answer. So let me try again. Do you agree with Justice Scalia's view that Roe was wrongly decided?
Senator, I completely understand why you are asking the question, but again, I can't pre-commit or say, yes, I'm going in with some agenda, because I'm not. I don't have any agenda. I have no agenda to try to overrule Casey. I have an agenda to stick to the rule of law and decide cases as they come.
Well, what I'm, as a person, I don't know if you'll answer this one either. Do you agree with Justice Scalia's view that Roe can and should be overturned by the Supreme Court?
Well, I think my answer is the same, because, you know, that's a case that's litigated. It could, you know, its contours could come up again. In fact, do come up. You know, they came up last term before the court. So I think, you know, what the Casey standard is, and that's just, it's a contentious issue, which is, I know, one reason why it would be comforting to you to have an answer. But I can't express views on cases or pre-commit to approaching a case any particular way.
Well, that makes it difficult for me, and I think for other women also on this committee.
It's possible she's just really good at playing pundit, but she almost seems too convincing sometimes in her lack of understanding or taking a position. Like, it's hard for me to convince myself that really she actually understands the, well, not the Roe ones, on the other ones, that she actually has a position here that's reasonable, because she's really good at faking the position and having no idea whatsoever about what's going on.
You know, the reason I believe you is because of an answer she gave today when she was asked about the rights enshrined in the First Amendment, and she couldn't respond. So let's listen to that clip.
What are the five freedoms of the First Amendment?
Speech, religion, press, assembly. Speech, press, religion, assembly. I don't know. What am I missing?
Redress or protest.
Okay.
But Susan, maybe you're right, but I feel like the average informed citizen knows more than she's actually pretending to know or not know.
Like, this is why I keep being so shocked by her. Like, from expecting someone who was, a qualified jurist in terms of intellectual and content familiarity, to seeing this, it's just like, okay, well, maybe she's faking all of it. Maybe she actually is not qualified on any level for this job. I mean, that's probably not the case. That's probably not what's going on here. I mean, part of me still believes that she has to be, like, baseline competent at the very least. Yeah. But, like, there's no evidence of that on display. There's been no evidence whatsoever that she's actually an intelligent, thoughtful person.
You know, I'm thinking back to the Kavanaugh hearings, and the only thing I remember about them, I like beer. But obviously, the testimony related to his the allegations against him, I don't actually remember a lot, because that was like the kind of the highlight that's left in the three brain cells that I have. I don't remember much about him being questioned about these, like, you know, basically actual issues. And
he gave similar responses in terms of like, oh, I can't commit to that, I can't commit to a position I take. Uh-huh. But he did better at doing so while seeming that like he was actually a man of like intellectual rigor, which, I mean, on that front, I guess I would score him better if that's, but it's, so I guess in terms of substance, there's not a huge amount of difference in what they actually said, but Jesus, it comes off sometimes with Amy Coney Barrett, like the lights aren't on upstairs.
But it's not going to matter, right? She's getting confirmed.
I mean, I ain't confident in anything in 2020, but she's probably getting confirmed.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay.
The real scenario is that how much COVID spread is going to go on to get there. And one thing I've not seen is that, I may have missed it, but has anyone questioned her yet on like her judgment in agreeing to go to this unmasked indoors events for her announcement? Like, has anyone even been like, hey, like you're a Supreme Court justice nominee and you've shown a remarkable lack of judgment here. Like, how do you explain that?
And having gotten the virus already, but maybe that's why. I mean, the thing is, she'll give the same response that the folks in the administration have been giving, which is like, well, we were all tested right beforehand. We all tested negative, and then we unmasked and we went there with masks on because that is what they did. But
and
that
was objectively unreasonable.
It was. Yeah, it was. But again, maybe in her head, she's like, I already got it. I had it. I'm safe. My family's fine. I mean, I don't know about the family situation, but she just didn't care. I think that explains it better than anything. She just didn't care because she already had it. Let's talk a little bit about some things happening in the DOJ. Yesterday, the news broke that Bill Barr closed his investigation into the Obama administration unmasking, the whole unmasking
thing. The non-troversy. Oh, my God.
The non-troversy. Yeah, he closed it quietly because he found no wrongdoing, and that was it. Didn't say a blip.
Rest in peace, masking controversy, 2017 to 2020.
God, I don't know where he is. I haven't seen him in a while, Bill Barr.
Yeah, I mean, did he get infected and he's trying to hide it? Would not be surprised.
Maybe. I don't know. No, that is actually probably the last time he was seen.
I mean, Barr has made it abundantly clear he's willing to play the part of political toady. but he does have some boundaries. Like, he does have some positions that are relatively firm. And, well, I may be overstating it, but the point being, he was never on board with the whole idea of just charging someone because Trump's demanding it. He knew that'd be an embarrassment to him and probably undermine Trump's own goals in the end. And I think eventually he was forced to concede that there was no scenario in which even his abilities at spinning would allow him to proceed with an indictment of someone for the unmasking stuff. Because there's just nothing there. There's so nothing there that even Barr felt like that was like not going to work out.
I think he was open to the possibility. He was hoping to. He was open hopeful. To find. Yeah, he wanted to find something. He's not the kind of person who would refuse to charge, you know, Trump's political rivals. He would absolutely. He wants to.
Oh,
do
yes.
that. He just.
He was
kind of
a wild goose chase. He was happy to do that. But there was just nothing there that could give him a predicate.
Well, Trump is pissed off about that. he is. Yeah, he's deeply disappointed in. And Bill Barr, and
plus Barr also knows though he can't be fired right now, so
he can't be fired right now, and he wouldn't have a job hopefully in a few months. You know, it's not looking good for Trump. I mean, the polls are putting Biden further and further ahead, even in states that. But again, and nobody would have guessed Trump would have been president the first time around. So I don't know.
He's not going to win the popular election. Like
that's for sure.
Nothing's for certain, but that's pretty certain.
That's pretty certain. Yeah. And he's certainly not going to win it because, I mean, like, we're doing things like, oh, my God, in yesterday's rally, he goes, suburban women, please like me. Please love me. Please vote for me. And then he tweeted out a picture of like an old home residence with Joe Biden photocopied in, kind of poking fun of Joe Biden, but also inadvertently poking fun of, or maybe on purpose, of the other senior citizens in that picture in their wheelchairs. He is just insane. But anyhow, Bill Barr did, however, apparently he is going to be pursuing charges or some kind of action against Stephanie Wolkoff, who wrote that book about Melania Trump. So yesterday, the U.S. Justice Department filed a complaint saying that she had broken the NDA that she had signed, and the complaint asked the court to set aside profits from the book in a government trust. Here's what I'm trying to figure out. Here's what the complaint says. It says that Wolkoff and Melania Trump in August 2017 sealed an NDA, basically. And it was that there was a contract with the U.S., with the United States, and so it was enforceable by the United States. Now, I didn't know that the NDA was signed during the presidency. I thought it was signed like earlier. Maybe that's what it is. But they have standing? The DOJ has standing in this?
That's what we call a novel legal theory.
Okay. So we don't know if they do. Isn't this something like...
This is all kinds of messed up. It'd be a scandal if we weren't drowning in scandals. And it's another example out of many of the DOJ pursuing Trump's personal interest under the guise
like
of them being...
Personal they're like his personal... What's it called?
I mean, they literally have stepped in to stop a woman who's suing him personally for defaming her because Trump called her a liar for her accusations that he'd raped her. And that had nothing to do with the presidency whatsoever. And yet the DOJ is like, okay, we can handle this. We can give an in-kind donation to Trump and person himself. It's the old saying, you can always sue. You can't always win.
Right.
And the DOJ is now employing that method to carry out Trump's personal interest.
Yeah. I'm guessing Melania is the one who's like out for blood on that, especially with the tapes that came out a couple weeks ago. Although again, nobody cares about them because it's just one thing after another. I mean,
Melania we've moved got on so from... lucky. Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
And she gave Trump COVID just so he could like announce it right after this tape came out.
I mean, we have completely gotten over the Trump's tax story. It's like, it was such a big story. And it's
still going on. I'm not over it. But we're still waiting for... The problem is, like, the New York Times, I mean, they have good reasons they can't publish the actual documents they have because resources. And they're kind of slow rolling it by doing individual articles here and there. But ultimately, like, that's not about the election. It's not about Trump's popularity or his base. That's about potential criminal liability for the Trump organization itself. Mm-hmm. Trump is boring, and I think it's gotten increasingly hard for me to get over that boringness. He just repeats himself all the time, and like my ability to care is constantly at war with how important it is that he is the amount of damage he can do. But like, he's just such a fundamentally boring human being.
He is, yeah. It's
but the tax stuff's interesting.
If he loses the election, do you think he'll actually face some charges on some of these things?
I don't think he'll personally face charges, and I don't want him to. Mm-hmm. But I do think his business is going to face some extreme liability, both legally and in terms of like, you know, ability to survive as a business operation.
I am really curious as to like if he's able to manage filing, basically not paying any federal income tax for a decade. And more. I'm really curious about like what his kids' tax returns look like. Don Jr. and Ivanka, they have to be doing the same kind of things.
Know Ivanka was involved in some of the tax dodging that Trump was doing. So, yeah, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Probably not to the same degree.
I mean, yeah. All right, so a highlight this week, a very exciting story that broke in the most horrifying way was that the FBI charged 13 men in a plot against Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan. We're talking about a right-wing militancy group. They're terrorists, domestic terrorists. They were going to kidnap her. I don't know what they were going to do to her.
The kidnapping was to get the federal charges, but the plan was to kill her. The kidnapping was a step along the way to kill her.
I would assume so. However, there has been no charge related to conspiracy to murder or anything related to murder.
Like, it may not have been, like, it could have been the facts they had in the federal jurisdiction. They weren't able to put that together.
Yeah, conspiracy, weapons possession. There is a terrorism charge, but they were going to storm the Michigan State Capitol. They wanted to start a civil war. And apparently, this is how close, they're basically Trump's base. Eric Trump actually had a campaign event scheduled yesterday at a place called Huron Valley Guns in Michigan. And apparently one of its former employees was part of this domestic terror group. So he had to sadly cancel that. It's one thing that might have gotten lost in this story is that apparently that group also had discussed Governor Northam of Virginia also as a potential target. Basically, they were looking at like Democratic governors and also some state legislators, too. They're very upset about the fact that Whitmer forced closings, and they believe that she caused businesses to basically shut down permanently because of that. Now, Governor Whitmer, in her statement, pointed out, you know, the kind of shit that had been coming out of the White House for 6 months, including Trump tweeting Liberate Michigan just a few months ago, that kind of fomented these things.
Yeah.
But
look, I am not an optimistic person. You may have noticed that by now. Mm-hmm. But the polling is encouraging. Like, our best bet out of all of this is that, again, it's just that we saved democracy by having Trump lose so badly in the polls that there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
And I feel like we have a good chance that happening. There's a good shot right now that it'll be to a point that no matter what Trump does, he actually has no viable path to challenge the election.
He will still challenge it. He will still challenge it.
He will, but it won't be like viable. But then I remember that like none of that necessarily applies to whether or not there'll be violence.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there will be. And I think he will encourage it. And I think that's like the scariest part of it. He's not going to be the person who's going to say, stand down, let the courts do their thing, let the ballots come in.
Stand back and stand by.
Yeah, exactly. Now, after the news broke that she was almost kidnapped and murdered, Trump tweeted, Governor Whitmer of Michigan has done a terrible job. She locked down her state for everyone except her husband's voting activities. The federal government provided tremendous help to the great people of Michigan. He went on to say that it was my DOJ and FBI that basically, you know, foiled up the plot against her. But he was kind of blaming her. He's like, it's your fault for doing this, for making people angry.
Yeah. And if he's going down, what if he just starts flailing and encouraging violence, you know, wantonly, just because that's all he can do. It's the only power he feels he has left. There are people out there who will go along with it.
Oh, I mean, like, I do believe that we're not going to emerge from this election without some election related violence. I don't think that's possible. Unless Trump wins the very first night. And I don't see how that's possible either. But landslide or no landslide, he is absolutely going to challenge it. It might not go anywhere. But he's not. I mean, the months after the election also will suck. And I think they're going to be highly dangerous, in fact. I will say this, though. When he was stuck inside doing the... Oh, my God. Actually, this past weekend, too. He was on this crazy tweeting tirade. What was he saying about New York? And did you see that whole thing?
I can't even move this anymore.
it was just tweet after tweet that New York is dying or New York is dead. I don't even know. Anyhow, I feel like him getting it back out in front of crowds, I almost feel like that's like the people around him saying, look, we got to distract this guy, because if he just sits home and watches the polls look worse and worse and worse. He's been attacking Fox News lately, too, because they're showing the same polls, that this is going to distract him and maybe keep him happy and dancing. And I'm okay with that. If that's what it does, except for the fact that there are people at the rallies exposing themselves and the rest of our country forever.
It's not a strategy. He's just flailing and needs the constant ego fixes.
Yeah, exactly. I just think it's a way to keep him happy. And he has said
Yeah, right now the Republicans are like, let's keep him happy while we get our sixth justice confirmed.
Yeah.
Like, just get him out there. Keep him like out of the way. Don't let him tweet about the nominee, for God's sake, and we're good to go. Has he tweeted? I have not heard of him tweeting about her yet, which... For him, it's a remarkable
restraint.
Yeah.
You know why? Because I think for him, it's like, it's going to happen. Like, you know, and I still don't think he doesn't really give a shit too much about her, right?
Justice. He doesn't really care that much about who.
Yeah. And he knows it's going to take place. Right now, he's consumed with the election stuff. Now, because the presidential debate was canceled, the Biden team decided, okay, well, they'll just hold a town hall that night. Trump today announces he can have a town hall on the same night. One will be on ABC, one will be on NBC. This is happening tomorrow, Thursday.
Why did they agree to that? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
For NBC?
Yeah.
For their own ratings? It's shitty of them. I mean, stupid of them.
I mean, just stagger it. Like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, like, it again, this undermines the process. Like, you want both candidates to have their time. Do it on Friday. Do it an hour earlier. They couldn't even schedule them at different times.
Or just have a freaking virtual debate like I should have had originally. I mean, it's kind of what it is now. It's a virtual debate across not just Zoom, but different channels.
Trump won't debate virtually. He'll do a town hall, but he will not. Yeah, I guess.
Switch back and forth a lot.
Right. Oh, it's going to be a shit show. Anyway, it's fine. It is what it is. So I guess that's it for this week. I don't think we have anything else to talk about. Anything happen around the world that needs notice, Susan?
Yes. And yet, right now, all America has time to worry about is our, you know, impending question of if democracy continues or not.
How many more weeks till the election?
5 million? 2, 3, 4? 5?
3.5 years.
3.5 years.
1,000 Sundays. Okay. We'll make it. We'll make it. All right, guys. Thanks so much, Susan. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back in 7 days.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.